Andy Serling next.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. Couple minutes in, Andy Serling standing by from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. It's hard not to, you know, hit the ground running. You wake up and it's warm and balmy and, you know, by 10 o'clock it's 90 degrees here.
I don't know what to tell you, Steve. I mean, it's an exciting piece of information for me and I think all your listeners.
It's spring. It's getting springy there. You have to answer the most important question. Maybe you're not the right guy for this, but how far away are
you? You know,
from
if you come to a question, you think maybe you're not the right guy for this. You know what?
You probably aren't.
Probably a really good chance I'm not the right guy.
Well, because.
If you ever looked at my tweets or the book, you'd know that the first turn race in the book for April 7th. I think Dave Grenade wrote about it too. But you're busy. It's warm out. You got weather reports to look at. You got weather reports to give. You got a lot going on. I don't know why. You can't just look at racing. You know, you want to look at all the things around you. And then when your guests come on, instead of being prepared, you just ask them questions. They ask them for you.
I want to know.
That's good. No, listen. I'm enjoying the Steve Bick vacation tour. I am, and I think everybody is.
Good.
Especially with these incredible updates about the weather in Florida.
Well, we're hoping to run next Friday, the 7th, and I'm just, how does it
work? Why don't you look at the condition book?
I, I am looking at the condition book. That's my point. Because I'm wondering, I haven't been home. Is it temperate?
So you're wondering if maybe there was a change made when I work in the racing office?
No. I'm wondering if the weather has been nice enough for grass to be ready.
Can you keep going with Shell's number? Did you have Ray Lou on today?
I tried. He hasn't responded. He's at Finger Lakes today.
You know what? He's even smarter than I thought he was.
Hey. Well, you. I won't say anything. I was excited for him. I mean, obviously, winning his
Who's
first.
The poor guy who finished second to him.
So why you got to be like that?
Don't worry, I already asked him.
I will.
Try to get to Akron on Friday.
I saw that, and I'm excited. I'm really delighted for him.
Looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
That's a big,
a very good rider, I mean, it's hard. He's young, but he's a good rider. I'm very happy to see him doing so well.
Well, no, I had Norm Cassie earlier this morning, and I said, Norm, fold in Ray Lou Gutierrez's portion of this. And he said he came into the paddock and said, we're winning. He said there was never, he brought such a positivity to it, and he said, she's winning, and then went out and did it.
I have two very smart friends that thought she made a ton of sense in that race. It was such a whack. I mean, she probably should have paid $7, not 7-1.
Yep.
Sort of crazy. I don't know. We discussed the Hoosier Philly phenomenon before, unfortunately, for Tom. She just, whatever. But, the idea that she was co-favored 6-5 and not 4th choice is sort of odd. But anyway, yeah. Also thrilled for Norm. It's a huge win for Norm. And, I mean, at this point, you could make an argument that she would be, based on that race, the favorite for the Oaks. Now, obviously, there's at least 3 or 4 more major preps to be run. You've got the Fantasy this weekend. You've got the Ashland coming up. You've got the Gazelle coming. I imagine there's something in California. And once again, I'm just not familiar with their 3-year-old fillies. And it's, other than Money's Gold, who's a sprinter at this point, and how far she'll eventually run, who knows. And she was obviously tremendous on Sunday. But there's just not a lot of exemplary horses out there, to say the least, in 3-year-old filly division. This filly in Orange feels like she's right up there at the top. We'll see what happens in Fantasy and on Saturday, and then we'll see what happens the next weekend.
Well, there's opportunity for somebody else, for several.
Yeah, I think Punch Bowl, who I don't know how many people are familiar with her, she's a super two Judd Marks. I think she's Judd Marks. For Brad Cox, she's running the Ashland, where I assume she's going to meet up against Julia Shining and Water, and what's her name? Wonder Wheel.
Yep.
So that'll be an important matchup with them. And we'll see. I mean, I know that Wet Paint was the favorite in the Oaks pool few weeks ago. I have no idea what person thought betting her at 4-1 2 months before the race. I mean, she could be favored in there and be 4-1. She's never run a dry track. She's not running exceptionally fast figures. I mean, she feels like a 15-1 shot, like a lot of them. I don't think she's was necessarily less likely to win than most horses, and probably more likely to win than some, but not 4-1. 10 or 12 to 1, maybe. I don't know. I mean, she loses on Saturday, she's going to be 15 to 1,
Yep.
If she wins, it's not even clear she'll be under 4 to 1. Even if she's favored, it's not clear how much under 4 to 1 she'll be.
No, I all fair.
I'm not trying to knock her. I'm just trying to sort of a dose of reality. And I mean, I don't want to make too much of wet tracks, but I think it's important to know that she's never been in a dry track. I think it matters. At some point, some level, and I think she's far from a lock in the Fantasy. We probably haven't really looked at the race, but I think that race is, there's other major contenders in there. I mean, the horse who finished second to Punch Bowl on the rail, she could be the second choice behind Wet Paint. I think that sort of shows, that basically shows where what people think of what we see from the States for. She's looking lucky.
Matt Shire.
Personally, I think Grand Love is going to win the race.
I just a little bit before you joined us, actually, I kind of gave the field just the, you know, the quick.
Oh, there's Pate. I'm going to go with Pate in the year of mispronouncing horses' names. year of mispronouncing. I'm going to go with Pate, maybe because I really like Pate. This is a private purchase and a switch to Mike Maker and immediately stretching her out. She's got pedigree that says nothing but going long.
Yeah.
Whether or not she's good enough, she wants to go long is another story.
I touched on that. Our friend Clinton Stewart had trained her.
Anyway, yeah. And then you got the Arkansas Derby. It's an interesting race. I mean, at this point, the Derby is so wide open. The last Saturday's UAE Derby is, in all likelihood, far and away the fastest prep that we've run, or has been run, I should say. It's just very hard to... It's not hard to take the horses seriously in the race. Obviously, that's relatively easy to do. It's hard to take them seriously as Derby contenders. And I think, you know, I do think that there is a reasonable amount of data over the last whatever years we have run that race that the horses that have won it have come over and underperformed the Derby. It doesn't mean a horse won't ever win out of that race.
Right.
But when you take a race like the Derby that's so difficult to win to begin with, that you have to imagine the preps actually do matter a certain way. And then to add in a horse who's shipped from Japan to get to Dubai, and then ships from Dubai to get here, I don't know, does the horse go back to Japan first? I don't even know what they do. That's an awful lot to throw at a horse in a race that's almost impossible to win to begin with. So I think you're already putting a horse in a handicap to win the race. So win a very, very difficult race. So for me, while I'm certainly interested in those horses and want to look at every horse, I do think you have to. And the other thing is, those horses are not going to be a big price in the Derby. People know how fast that race was. I mean, I think if you look at it from a figure standpoint, a buyer figure, it's probably 5 points faster than the World Cup. Now, the World Cup is a bit of an eyesore, but even if it's 100, that means it's 105, you know? So those are horses that I think should be reckoned with as horses. I just don't know if you really want to take them. It probably won't be such a very good price in the Derby. They just seem like bad value horses to me. And what's going to happen is, now all of a sudden the whole world thinks all these Japanese horses are superior, you know, horses, and they're going to start overpaying them. That's the next thing to happen. And overbet horses are not usually great ideas in the Derby.
No, exactly. And it's going to add no little amount of mystery.
But also interest. I think it's not a bad thing. I think it is likely. Listen, if you looked at the next 10 years of Triple Crown races, there are 30 of them. The chances that a horse in Japan wins one of them are pretty high, mathematically.
Sure.
But I know they're running a horse in Santa Anita this weekend, right? There's a Japanese horse standing in Derby.
Mandarin Hero.
A lower level horse, not the top.
Right.
You almost wonder if it's more of a testing ground. And if Japanese connections get serious about winning the Derby, they obviously have the firepower to do it. The question is figuring out the best way to get there. And so far, I think we have seen that Dubai is not the best way to get there. It doesn't mean it can happen, but I'm not going to gamble on it happening.
Well, there's also, you know, there's also going to be this one named Continuar that didn't leave Japan. Has told Churchill Downs that they're coming. Lion Racehorse Company Limited, trainer Yoshito Yahagi, and
how did they qualify?
They've got a Japan road to the Kentucky Derby qualifiers,
as they should.
Yeah, so there's that Japanese horse in addition to whether Mandarin Hero pops up and finishes, first, second, third in the Santa Anita Derby, and then of course Derma Sotagaki, and that Dora Eredi, and there's also the one that got 20 points, Perrier. So there's
I don't think 20 is getting in the Derby.
It's a weird. No, I agree, but
yeah, it'll be a lot.
Yep.
And I look forward to the Kentucky breeders, their excitement at the Japanese horse that's going to stand at stud in Japan. I look forward to how excited they're going to be about that, having the Derby.
Well, a lot of this, and we'll talk tomorrow with Sid Fernando, and let Sid kind of riff on, and he has before, you know, the whole history of, you know, how Japan got to where they, you know, where they are. I mean, they've worked at it.
Sunday Silence helped.
Sunday Silence was a huge help, and then there's all the mares. You know, there's the steady supply of premium mares that have, you know, that have been added to their broodmare bands, and I kind of don't understand why there's people that are like aghast that it's somehow some sort of tremendous indictment of American breeders.
I would assume a lot of American Kentucky based pedigrees in there. Number one, and there are a lot of people aghast about a lot of stupid things. But they're not smart over there. They don't know what they're doing. They don't have the money to spend. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? I mean, I'm sure they've got a lot of very bright people. They've obviously spent a lot of money. I don't, you know, they're certainly entitled.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it makes racing better and more interesting. It does feel like all these, the good Japanese horses have captured a lot of fans' imagination. So, I you know, attention, I should say. So yeah, what's wrong with that? I don't know. Why shouldn't it be a global world of racing?
Agreed.
Isn't racing worse? Because many people here don't look at fund racing. A lot of people over here do. Different places than have for many years. I think it opens up a lot of people's eyes. I don't know. It just makes it worse.
I agree.
It's a big deal in other sports when they, you know, the NBA or the NFL or something go over and play overseas. Why is that a big deal and this shouldn't be? I don't know. I think it's great.
I tend to agree.
I mean, when did the Japan Cup start? 79-ish? 80? Because Mersey Doats won the first one, right? And I think Mersey Doats, I believe that Mersey Doats won her first turf start the day of Coastal's Belmont. I'm not sure, but I think that she won her turf debut in 79. So, look what kind of race that's turned into, right?
Yes. Well, we also benefit from. I mean, Japan is, you know, they've got that restrictive wagering scenario that, in terms of importing signal, but it, you know, they certainly, I imagine, would be taking more races from North America than less going forward.
I don't know about that stuff.
Andy, let's talk about some of the results from the weekend. You hinted at a couple, and you guys were covering various things. Sunday you included Sunland, which had a wacky outcome. We talked to Joe Marr yesterday, and it's actually a fun story, but it doesn't feel like a horse that, you know, is going to be a Derby impact. But talk about the Louisiana Derby.
Rich Strike part two.
Well, it may be.
Well, I mean, the Louisiana Derby, I said a couple of things out of it were, obviously the winner ran well, but he was also able to actually crawl around the racetrack. So I don't want to make too much, you know, I don't need a 95 buyer. I mean, obviously for Todd, if you look at Todd's right now, his three Derby horses, all of whom are legitimate, he's got a speed in the winner of this race. I'm not saying he's going to lead the Derby, but a forwardly placed horse. You've got a Forte, who's sort of a, you know, middle ground horse, and you've got Tapa Trice, who comes from well back. So it's a not only a good three talented horses to have your Todd, it's also three horses with not, you know, somewhat contrasting running styles. So it puts you in positions and not, as a whole, to not be victimized by the dynamics of the race, right?
Yep.
You're sort of well set up depending on how the race is run. So that's a great position for Todd in the end. Whether or not this is not a horse that I would be inclined to be a huge fan of Derby, has three races, walked in the front end in this race. But if he ran a fast race and just discounted, it would be kind of silly. You know, fast race, I'd say, relative to what we're seeing out there. So, I mean, I'm not sure he's not a better horse than... I mean, Cabbage Race near sort of funny horses because they have such contrasting styles, but he was fine. You know, I think Instant Coffee, unsurprisingly, got completely exposed in there. He had been a horse that had taken advantage of very, very advantageous circumstances and sort of lesser spots. And I know he beat the horse that won the Rebel and two fills, I think, as well, but the pace was faster in those races, you know? So I think the race set up very favorably for him and not for the other ones. So whether or not we saw a serious Triple Crown type contender in this race, I'm not optimistic. It doesn't seem impossible. I don't think it's quite like last year where you had Epicenter, who was very clearly one of the horses to beat coming out of the race. I don't get that feeling about this horse. Not to knock, I mean, I would be shocked if he's a major player, but he's, at this point, it's not my cup of tea. I don't like horses that come off sort of candy trips. And I'm not sure how good that race was. I think that Two Fills was interesting because he probably, in my opinion, run as well, if not better than anybody. And I said this a number of times, I think he'd better show in Risen Star. But it's hard not to say his freakout performance had nothing to do with synthetics, right? Because it was so much better from a speed figure standpoint than the other race he's run. And I like Two Fills. I'm not going to jump on him just because he ran a fast race in synthetic. And that's one of the problems with synthetic, especially as a race in regards to looking at dirt races. And, you know, not to get into all the hand-wringing and silliness involving Naira putting the synthetic surface to use for off-the-turf races and share the load for winter racing and sort of give us a better, diverse product in the winter. The same people that complain that the racing's been bad in the winter at Naira, and that's a very fair complaint, are complaining we're putting a synthetic track to use to supplement our program in the winter. I don't know how you can look at it both ways. If you love the product in the winter, maybe you're upset, but I'm not heard too many people saying that. But the problem that I've, you know, gotten across is what horse players are apprehensive about in playing synthetics is if a horse doesn't have past performances telling us how they run on synthetics, then it's a tough surface to just sort of guess on because there are enough variables right to begin with. And to throw in the, I'm guessing you'll handle the surface, that's another big ask of horse players. So the Two Fills things complicates things because I do think he's an interesting horse. I don't think he's impossible going forward, but I also don't think he's, you can say he's as good as his 101 because he ran on synthetics. Maybe he is. And I'm a little bit leaning towards liking him because I've had a thing for him for a little while, but I'm not going to go overboard because he ran his big figure on synth.
Well, what he does have in his favor, you would feel is you know, a running style that...
Well, it's trackable, that running style didn't work in the Risen Star, now did it? So I guess all things being equal, he's paced him somewhat. You know, the pace, he's going to be paced him in the sense that he needs the pace to not be wicked. You know, he falls more in line with the winner of the Louisiana Derby in that regard.
You know,
I think we saw two horses that you can't say didn't stamp themselves as real contenders this weekend. Just not sure where they stand. And once again, there's no reason to be worried about that because you'll see what happens in the preps this weekend. You'll see what happens in the preps next weekend. And then you'll see how the race draws and who's actually in the race. And you know what? You can handicap the race when they draw it. You still have plenty of time to handicap it. There's no reason to be handicapping it now. You can sort of get a familiarity with the horses, but I wouldn't want to get a biased familiarity. I'm trying to keep an open mind.
There you go. A couple of performances on that undercard at Turfway. I mean, we should mention.
I don't know anything that happened in the intercept for winning the Oaks. I don't know, and frankly, don't care that much.
All right. Well, I was going to bring up Botanical winning that Bourbonnette Oaks at Turfway. She has got the same, you know, going forward toward Kentucky. She's got,
once again, I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, the same kind of thing. Wolfie's Dynaghost, who...
once again, I don't really care about him. But if you want to keep asking about races that I've told you I'm not interested in, I understand Wolfie's Dynaghost, if you want. Good for him.
Well, Wolfie's Dynaghost could have been, you know, you think about... The topic of the synthetic surface at, let's say, at Belmont, you know, there's a horse that, you know, started his career in New York, and...
He has wins on synthetic surface.
He's 3-for-3 now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it
he's very excited. He's still running in 3 years. We're running synthetic race to winter at Belmont. He's probably grinning in his stall.
He could be. He
Glad
could
you
be.
Brought him up.
You know, performance-wise, one race that nobody really has, I would have thought, that given Art Collector's presence in that New Orleans Classic, and nobody seems excited by West Willpower's career best.
Well, I think it tells you something, doesn't it?
Maybe.
They run that race? I thought maybe they were still circling around behind the gate.
.109 for him there, and... you know, he gets added to...
Well, do you have anybody that was at Fairgrounds to come on the show?
Well, we're reviewing some items. All right, well, talk about... Here, talk about...
I told you I didn't watch those races.
I'm just mentioning highlights from the weekend. What...
Okay. I'm learning a lot here. Why don't you just go on?
You know...
Can I read my book?
You know who... we haven't talked about, other than mentioning the win, Maple Leaf Mel came back nice for Engelhardt and
Parcells. She did. She got a 79 buyer, so I'm not ready to anoint her. You know, and I think it's hard because the next New York Red Stake is at the end of the end of May, you know, big New York Red Stake form at the end of May. So you look at her in Downtown Hottie, and you kind of wonder if they're thinking of, after what we saw from Money's Gold, the Beaumont becomes a much more appealing race for three-year-old fillies, right? Because with Money's Gold heading towards the eight bells, wanting to win graded stakes, sprinting, they may want to go to Beaumont, whenever that is at Keeneland, because Money's Gold looks like a horse that's going to be quite formidable. So I don't know what they're going to do with her. You know, she just came back. Are they going to wait to the end of May? Do they want to get on a race in her? They can always run her at Keeneland and bring her back for the Bowery. At the end of May, I think the same question goes for Downtown Hottie. Maple Leaf Mel, right?
Yeah.
She ran well. Not, you know, 179 buyer isn't going to get her any major stakes wins, but it's good to see her back. We'll find out how good she is ultimately, because she'll get tested against some better horses. But it was nice to see her back. So I see Jeremiah. I haven't seen him in forever.
Cross traffic filly and Rosario aboard. There was another, hold on, I've got it here, from the weekend,
I think one of the horses that had you actually look at the races that you might have wanted to bring up was Harrodsburg, that won the first race on Sunday.
I missed that.
I can tell. Harrisburg was a first-time starter. They had been supposedly been working very well for Rob Atrus, and it was a race where you had a half to favorable outcome. You had the first fold of race from paid-up subscriber, and they took money. A favorable outcome horse named for Rick Ocasek ran second. But Harrisburg won was very impressed for Rob Atrus, got an 87 buyer. I mean, the second horse, I guess, got low 80s. They were nine in front of the others. And even the model horse ran third. You know, that horse had run mid-70s in his two races last year. He got a 63 because he just got drowned. The second horse got an 83 buyer. So it was a spendthrift horse for Chad Brown. But Harrisburg was a very, very good-looking winner of that race. Promising horse.
Constitution.
Twin Creeks Racing. I mean, supposedly, I guess, it worked very favorably with Rosa Veloce, who's been running really well. So, and he ran like he had. He ran like that story was legit. 22.39, 45.86, and just opened a huge lead top of the stretch, and won by a little over two. 6.5 the first time. It's a very, very promising three-year-old horse. There'll be some interesting sprinters. I mean, I'll be interested to see what they're able to do with him, you know. It's hard, you know, you want to run Woody Stevens, but that's, what, about 10 weeks away. So I guess it's not impossible. You find a non-winner's one, you know, somewhere in the middle, and you get in there, and you get, or, you know, there may be a try that with like the small stakes, the Gold Fever, it used to be the Gold Fever something, maybe, to run them in. Depends how ambitious they get, or they take a more conservative route and think, we'd rather try to be a little more conservative and get him to a race like the Jerkins, but you have to start thinking big when you run a three-year-old. He was an 87 buyer, and he really was impressive. But it's a big ask, you know. It's always a big ask.
Here
it's 11:30.
Yep.
I must be almost done. Who's coming up next?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas, but...
Really? You're thinking, who's the guy? Al Roker, maybe.
Al Roker, That was a funny random suggestion.
Because we started off with a very big, interesting letter conversation. I was trying to segue right back to that. So come full circle.
Oh, there you go.
You have a couple of ideas. Really, that's good to know.
Well,
you call it up, or
what happened? I've been wanting to. Well, Ray Lou. Both Ray Lou Gutierrez and Ron Fauché, I was hoping to get in proximity, and Ray Lou kind of quashed that a little bit, but Ron, I don't know if I have enough time really to, because Papo's going to join us too this half hour, and I don't know if. I don't want to shortchange Ron because
he seems to really be getting to you down in Florida.
So I don't know. We'll see. And you know what?
Where's this big tour going after Florida?
Kentucky.
So you're going to Kentucky. So you're going to be there for opening week in Keeneland?
Yes, I am.
Very nice. And where does the tour go after that?
Well, Tina's on vacation, so we're going to New Orleans, actually. And we're going to basically spend her Easter break in New Orleans on Jackson
Square.
You're
going to Jazz Fest?
No, Jazz Fest is the last weekend in April, 1st in May.
Right,
yeah, it's always that. I went years ago. I went twice.
And the good old days when you were really fun and wild.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I remember those days a long, long time ago, vaguely.
Well,
farther and farther in the rear view.
Did you ever go for that for Jazz Fest?
Being that I've never been in New Orleans,
you've never been to New Orleans, huh? Yeah, you have
a conversation I have had about 10 times.
That's right. That's right.
Apparently, you're having a rough morning.
Well, there's a
lard on you. Rough morning.
Somebody else.
Did you get attacked by a manatee or something?
By a manatee. Oh, the humanity. the Jazz Fest, it's too bad that it's in that spot because...
Those are fairgrounds.
Right, and it is so much fun. I went with my girlfriend from Kansas City, and we went like twice in 3 years and just had a ball. You know, because there's all these different stages, so there's all different styles of music. Yeah, it's amazing.
All about it, dude.
It's just amazing. Saw Stevie Ray Vaughan there.
I think Dead and Company are playing there.
I haven't looked at the lineup.
Yet another one of the tour stops of their final tour that I won't be going to.
Hmm. Well. Andy, I appreciate
it. Garcia is coming back.
No?
It turns out he's been in hiding for the last 30 years. So I'm interested.
Well, Hammer, I know, is going to go to a couple.
No, he's very dedicated.
He is.
More than me.
He is. He very much is. All right. Andy, I appreciate
it. It's been incredible. It really has. It's been a life-changing experience for me. It really has.
For everyone. For all of us.
I think it has.
They all can't be virtuosos.
Well, you know, I have a dentist appointment coming up, and, you know, I might be a little bit, you know, concerned about that. So I don't really have anything to be concerned about whatsoever.
Well, you're constantly, you're at the doctor all the time.
I always say I know the dentist every 6 months. I like my dentist. He's a good guy. He comes to Saratoga. So.
I was going to say, isn't your dentist the guy that comes to the races?
No, but he comes with some friends. They play golf. They usually come out. He usually come Travers weekend.
Yeah, I remember once you said
that. I've known my dentist for a long, long time. I met him. I got introduced by my brother because he took drumming lessons from my brother back in the 30 years ago or more.
Your brother taught drums?
My brother studied African drumming in the bush in Ghana, Nigeria. Back in the 80s.
How about that?
He has amazing slides. I haven't seen him in many, many years, but amazing slideshow from then. Yeah, I think it's somewhere in the late 80s he went for, he was there about 8 months, I think. 8 or 9 months, somewhere there.
That's something you've never, I, is new information to me.
Well, there you have it.
That's really cool, actually. Have you been to Montreal?
Not a long time.
Did you ever go to the rhythmic drums and up in the park?
No.
Would that, because that is sort of that tradition where there's literally like 30 drummers with those African drums and steel drums, and it's amazing. It's an amazing thing. Sunday mornings, Sunday like from 10 to 1.
I'm usually free on Sunday mornings, so I'll probably head up there soon. Maybe Easter I could go.
There you go. But, well, as we say when I lived in Montreal, bon pack.
See you later.
Happy Easter. Andy Serling, everybody. Oh, my God. Too funny. We got a couple. Let me take about 5-6 minutes and clean up the rest of this. So I don't need Maple Leaf Mel. Thank you for her, getting her finished up. We took care of John White. Oh, I didn't hear from Mike Welch this morning, now that I'm thinking about it. The two steaks here at Gulfstream, I should slip those in. Crispy Cat, George Delgado for AMO Racing with Paco Lopez. Won the Texas Glitter, the boys' version. And then when it came to the girls' race, where is it? That we talked about that with Mike. The Melody of Colors. Here we go. Sassy Nature. Jack Sisterson. CTR Stables. The Calverts. And this a straight fire, a cowbred filly that won well. Even money under Julian Leperoux. That was something we said with Mike, right? That there wasn't a ton of pace. And that was it the eighth that was there was that decent price in there for the all the multi most of the multis paid I don't have them all at my fingertips, but the coast things like the Coast to Coast pick five, and I know it paid 6,000 on was it 6,000 on Saturday, I think. Because I was watching the anchor leg, and you had I think that $30 horse, the Jimmy Toner, Burning Daylight Farms, and Rebecca Galbraith, Traffic Song, Wire to Wire under Jesus Ruiz, $29.60 to boost things along. You actually had a couple of decent prices. You had a $20 winner too for Steve Badu. Hercules paid 1960. So there were some decent mutuals kind of sandwiched around the around the favorite in the stake. The rest of the Florida Cup, let's get this done. Zydeco for Ramon Minguet. And Stud Carmen Christina, the owners. Cajun Breeze wins the sophomore, the OBS sophomore stake. That was the one for the boys, bred by D. Ellen Cook and Suzette Parker. 3-2 favorite, paid 520. Drama Chorus, second choice in the Grey Goose Turf Classic. This is Tim Padilla and Peter Mattson. And, of course, familiar Mid-American Racing connections. I'm going to take the Florida bred. This is actually a horse that Mattson bred himself. Big Drama out of Miss Molly By Golly, the Scat Daddy mare. And the Big Q, Alonzo Quinonez, aboard. Paid $780. You already know about Money's Gold. Crowns, our friends at Crowns Way. How funny. I forgot about this. Crowns Way Racing and partners, Kelsey Danner. We talked about this last week when we inadvertently ran into them. And Otago with Antonio Gallardo up by a neck at 13-1 over Bapio, the 4-5 favorite. This is that Spitestown colt that we talked about. That's great. This was the Equistaff sophomore turf. And Magical Warrior with Castellano for Jerry Bennett. This was this is a horse that, this is another, I mean, it's crazy, all the connections that we talked to at OBS one days later. Magical Warrior, Castellano, 11-1, paid 2360, winning stables, and Rich Averill, Averill Racing. Isn't that, it's crazy how many of those. This is a Poseidon's Warrior gelding, four-year-old, that Richard Arnold bred in the Naira Betts Sprint. And finally, the Pleasant Acres Distaff Turf Sweet Danny Girl for Carlo Vacareza. We talked to Carlo a couple of weeks ago. And this is a horse that he co-bred with J&J Stables. Nick Vacareza also on the ownership line. Sweet Danny Girl with Javier. Wire to wire in the Pleasant Acres. So there was your Florida Cup results as the sort of the coda to the Tampa season. And finally, with just a couple of minutes, Sam Houston, the Texas bred action Saturday afternoon, and Gold Pilot. Brett Calhoun had a big, I think won three, if I'm not mistaken. Star of Texas, this was the My Golden Song. Gelding. Sanders and Hirsch. Brett's, one of Brett's, you know, big outfits. Gold Pilot. Short price, 2-5. In the Texas Thoroughbred Oaks, Santa Fe Gold, a fast and a filly for Sanders and Hirsch and Brett, wire to wire, romping winner at 3-5. Karen Jacks sent out Carl Moore's I'm a Lucky Charm as the near 6-5 second choice with No Mas Tequila. This was in the San Jacinto turf. Another My Golden Song, bred by the Ellerbees, and in the Spirit of Texas, Too Much Action, a Too Much Bling. This is the, which we'll talk about when Jerry O'Dwyer, Jerry, I think, is on his way back, maybe right now, because I'm not sure. I reached out to him and said, when you get home, we'll have Jerry talk about Sibelius's win in the Golden Shaheen. But Too Much Action by Ahead with Leandro Goncalves for Double O Racing and Trevor Johnson. Too Much Bling, four-year-old. I'm a Discreet Lady won the Yellow Rose with Valdez Jimenez. This is Broberg for Dwayne Coker and Todd White. Discreet Cat, seven-year-old mare, also Valdez Jimenez, and a decent price, too. Beat the 4-5 favorite and paid $14.20. And the late action, Sunlit Song, who's tough, Mindy Wills. This is Becky Harding and Carolyn Barnett. And Barnett bred this My Golden Song gelding. Now eight. Sunlit Song won his share. And that in the Richard King. And finally, in the Texas Thoroughbred Association Derby, Release McCracken. Again, Valdez Jimenez had a big day. And this is Calhoun, but for Mansfield Racing, Susan Moulton. Mrs. Moulton bred this one out of her Indian Charlie mare, Conjurus McCracken. How many? I don't know how many, out of curiosity. I've seen a couple. See about McCracken. I don't have the stats. I'll find the stats about his stake winners. So there you go. All right, good. We got quite a bit caught up. I'll save the Dubai, the other Dubai action, for both the Jerry O'Dwyer visit as well as a visit from Dick Powell tomorrow. Let Dick opine on what went on. And, all right, I feel like I caught up on everything. Good, because I luckily I've got an expandable, I've got the expandable briefcase. That's the, how funny. And literally just a couple of minutes ago, Jerry O'Dwyer is back on American soil. That's so funny. He just landed in Florida. I'm going to tell him, talking about you. I love it. Well, this has got to be, this will be a fun conversation when we talk to Jerry O'Dwyer, for him to do what he did. Just amazing. All right, let me get Papo in here, and we've got about 10, 12 minutes to spend to close out the morning. We haven't talked in a couple of weeks as between HBPA and Vegas, and then last week's the OBS action. There's been just a little too much going on. So, chance to say good morning, Papo Morales.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. It's great to catch up. I'm sorry about the last couple of weeks.
Oh, that's okay. March was a busy month. Had trips myself, some unplanned and some planned. So, busy myself, but yeah, everything's good here. We're still working on the Form to Win harness. Hope to have that out relatively soon. Working with the guys about getting my filters now. My basic filters are pre-programmed into the app for all new users. They're just going to have to go to filters. They'll see my filters. They can slide them up and start using them. The next step is going to be to have the filters automatically applied for users. So right off the top, just logging in and pulling up a race, they'll have a basic filter applied to kind of cut down the learning curve. And then if they want to experiment a little bit and, you know, use all the features of the app, then they can create their own filters.
Well, I was going to say, when it comes to that and suggesting, I mean, there's certain people that are, you know, that are probably more adept at it than others. I mean, it doesn't take much practice to get acclimated. But still, when it comes to, you know, locking it in and setting up your own, some people are a little intimidated by that.
Yeah, it can be, you know. But, I mean, it does, like anything, Steve, handicapping does involve some work. So, you know, I mean, we're trying to simplify it. So if you want to go in there and, you know, I mean, it's pretty good just using my standard filter if you just want to look at the top three horses. But if you want to really dig into it, then you gotta put a little work into it. Nothing in life worthwhile is free. So except salvation, but yeah. Other than that, you're gonna have to gotta apply yourself just a little bit. But that's okay; makes you a better person.
Well, and you know, for those, let me ask you, for those that haven't, you know, gotten their hands on it through AmWager, how, you know, how much more do they have to do to download these days?
Well, right now, nothing, Steve. I mean, it is free. So you can go to formtowin.com and start using it right away. If you actually wanted, you know, if you want to start creating filters and everything, you got to give an email address, but it's free. So there's no, there's no hoops that you have to go through to actually use it. I mean, the benefit of using it if you're an AmWager player is if you highlight horses in Form to Win, they'll automatically be highlighted in an AmWager on the betting pad, so you can go in there and bet your selections. But yeah, it's a free product right now. I can't say it's always going to be that way. But yeah, you can access that through just going to formtowin.com, and you can sign up for, use the app right there on your phone or your laptop, you know, whatever device you're particularly using.
Well, and you know, the website gets clearer and you know, easier to navigate. If you go scroll down to the bottom too, you got the link to your tutorials. People can basically get step by step help. It's all just laid out, showing how, you know, how to utilize the filters, and it's really a habit and practice. The more you try, the more you tinker with it, the easier it becomes. I mean, it, and it just you know, we right from the get-go, we talked about how, you know, particularly if you weren't going to invest in you know, a full, let's say, a Saturday of racing, that if you were just going to, you know, you just want to play some races, it's just fast, it's easy, it, you know, it gives you a as we call them, a snapshot of, you know, what you can expect and who the contenders are, and it's a speed, essentially, it's a speed algorithm.
Right, and obviously, Steve, the more starts that a horse has, the better it's going to be. That's why it's so good with Hong Kong, and then, you know, other tracks, you know, allowance races and everything. I mean, some of the maiden races, we don't have any data on, so right now you're just going to have to use, you know, pedigree and inner angles, but anything with data on, I mean, some of these prep races, though, you have horses stretching out from, you know, 8 furlongs, so a mile and a 3/16, it's hard for us purely on our algorithm to find those horses. But we'll come derby time, we'll have plenty of mile and an eighth starts and plus, so I feel fairly comfortable that it'll do very well on those races as well.
Well, and the two things that we've noticed in a year doing this, places that have, let's say, Woodbine and the synthetic tracks, places where horses run on a regular basis, horses of a certain class that, you know, that are just have an established form, the same way that the, you know, the Australasia information has been so productive too. I mean, we follow the Australasians, the Aussies, that you know, particularly when it comes to Hong Kong, and you know, that's a perfect, you know, scenario too. That these are horses that run every 3 weeks essentially, and the more that form is there, the more perceptive the analysis gets.
Yeah, exactly, Steve. So I mean, that applies to whether it's, you know, claiming races. A lot of these claiming races have, the horses have several starts. It's rare. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because we have seen huge jump-ups for other reasons. But anytime horses, you know, you have 4 or 5 starts, you've got a good body of work to, you can work with, you know, anticipating and projecting how they're going to run, even if they are stretching out. And, you know, the HKJC has been very interested, and we've had several meetings. We got a meeting with them late tonight with their members, executives. They're interested in it themselves. And then we're also, on that same front, going to be running a special win bonus on all Hong Kong races. So I'll get you that more information. We're going to start in April. We'll also be more active on social media. We did hire a social media person.
Oh, from the just right about 3 weeks ago, you put out the trial below.
She should be starting next week, so we're excited to have more of a social media presence. And then also, Steve, what I wanted to say, you know, I'm involved with helping the Backside Learning Center at Churchill. You know, just making awareness of their needs. They have up to 1,000 people there when, you know, working on the backside when the horses ship in, and they'll be there pretty much all year until Churchill closes in November. And there's a lot of things that they need in terms of, you know, health and wellness and education, facilities. I know they're trying to raise money to redo the dorms there. So they have a couple of fundraising events. The second one of the year is going to be in 3 weeks, April 18th. Which is a Tuesday. It's going to be at the Louisville Thoroughbred Society here in downtown Louisville, from 5:30 to 7:30. It's going to be a Derby handicapping social. So I encourage people. You can find out more about that on their social media, on Twitter, and then also their website, which is backsidelearningcenter.org. So anything that we can do to raise funds for the people on the backside. You know, these are the people that are taking care of the horses. And they also need, you know, they need attention too. And we can do a better job as an industry of taking care of these people.
That's for sure.
I'll be at the event and, you know, meeting people and talking to them and bringing awareness. And you know, they're always looking for volunteers, Steve. So you can go online and reach out. They have a great director, Sherry Stanley. She's the executive director. She's been with them several years, and you know, she's aggressive in trying to get people involved. So we can't forget about those that are working with horses, whether it be the grooms or the hot walkers or, you know, the trainers are limited in some capacity with their ability to help people out. So, you know, it's kind of you would think it would be the track's job, since they're stabling the horses there, that they would have some incentive to help with basic needs for these people. Historically, that has not been the case. So we need to do a better job as an industry of looking after those people.
Well, Backside Learning Center, one of the industries, you know, along with things like Anna House in New York, the Backside Learning Center is a big success and has got a very strong underpinning that looks after everybody and the children particularly, and helping their education, especially the early education, the daycare and more. So April 18th, get me all the information, and we'll keep reminding. I don't get in till that Saturday, actually the 22nd, but otherwise we'd come along. But I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, it's important, Steve. It's you always we've done a better job, I would say, as an industry of taking care of the retirement of the horses and the retraining. So I think this is the next big thing. I think NIWA's done a really good job with it through their best team. I've met with some of those individuals, and you know they get funding directly from NIWA.
Sure.
So
and still, you know, still have to raise too. Still
yep.
Always have to raise.
And sure, it's a work in progress on many fronts. But Backside Learning Center is doing a great job, and anything we can do to support them is what we should be doing, including myself.
Well done.
If I'm involved.
Good job, Papa Morales. Everybody, Form to Win. Form to Win continues to keeps evolving too, and keeps improving. Formtowin.com, and right there on your. Right on your interface at AmWager. Papo, I appreciate it. Talk next week.
Sounds great, people. Talk to you later.
There we go. Got to pull up. Send you out into the day, Tuesday. Norm Cassie, Nacho Correas, Joe Clancy, Papo, and Andy. Tomorrow, Sid, Dick Powell, Alan Foreman, Jerry O'Dwyer, Ron Fauché, Seth Merrow. And more. Replay 6 to 9. Yesterday's show, as soon as Casey can chop it up after recording it this morning. Good luck if you're playing today. Talk to you in the morning here at Gulfstream. Start to get ready for Florida Derby and Arkansas Derby Day here and at Oaklawn. Thanks, everybody.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet.